Hi everyone, it's Abadesi, your host of today's Product Hunt Radio, where I'm joined by the founders, investors, and makers that are shaping the future of tech. On this episode, I chat with Linda Shea, co-founder at Scalar Capital. In this episode, we talk about her life at Coinbase and starting a crypto fund, financial inclusion and other ways crypto could change the world, what to look for in a co-founder, and best resources for upskilling on crypto. We also discuss her favorite products, Trello, Calendly, Superhuman, Wobot. But before we jump in, let's give a shout to our sponsors.
Do you remember a time when you started working for yourself? It was certainly no small feat, and you've been insanely busy ever since. Our friends at FreshBooks are here to make things easier for freelancers like you. FreshBooks invoicing and accounting software is designed to save you time and all those terrible administrative tasks. Create and send professional-looking invoices in 30 seconds and get paid 2 times faster with automated online payments. Also, file expenses with ease to keep them perfectly organized for that lovely tax time. Go to freshbooks.com/producthunt and enter Product Hunt Radio in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. In addition to my day job at Product Hunt, I also invest in early stage startups through a fund I started. I called it Weekend Fund. At first, I was hesitant to invest in startups, worried that my time would get sucked away into back office management, LP tax reporting, and all the overhead that goes into managing a fund. Fortunately, AngelList Venture Services handle all that for me, so I can focus on finding and backing great entrepreneurs. So far, AngelList has hosted over 130 venture funds, ranging from $500,000 to several millions of dollars under management. The team is super knowledgeable, having supported hundreds of investors over the years, and eager to help fund managers plan a fundraising strategy. Once you've raised capital from LPs, you choose what startups to back, and AngelList handles the rest. If you're interested in investing in startups, take a look at angel.co/venture funds, or email me at ryan@producthunt.com, and I'd be happy to help.
Linda, thanks so much for joining us today on Product Hunt Radio. I'm really excited to have you here. You're an expert on so many things, particularly crypto. So I know this will be an exciting one for the crypto heads in the community and also people who just want to find out a bit more about all the other cool things you've been working on across tech, being an operator in startups, being an investor, being a founder. But for those who maybe aren't super familiar with you, could you tell us a bit about what you're working on?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. So I run a crypto asset investment firm, and so we invest solely in coins and tokens. And I've been working in the crypto space for a very long time. I'm super passionate about, well, long time compared to how long the space is, but I'm super passionate about what crypto can do for the world. I got into this idea of censorship-resistant money and how people all over the world can have access to storing their wealth. And a lot of people in the world actually don't have access to bank accounts, so this gives them access to the financial system. So I really decided to spend my career in this space and invest in founders who are building really amazing things in the space.
That's so cool. I really love that you touch on financial inclusion as well, because I think that's something that more and more people are talking about and care about, and you can even see governments starting to legislate towards supporting that. Rewinding into the past just a little bit, tell us about your career journey. So where you worked before, you were where you are now.
Yeah, so my first job out of college was working at AIG doing portfolio risk management. This was really interesting because it was post-financial crisis, and AIG needed to clean up a lot of their modeling, a lot of their portfolio management practices. So I actually saw firsthand a lot of the inefficiencies of the financial system and just kind of some of the ramifications of the financial crisis itself. And I got even more interested in decentralized systems after I saw that. I had already been interested in Bitcoin, but didn't really think it was going to be anything legitimate, because back in the early days, Bitcoin was kind of seen as this like shady thing. It was associated with Mt. Gox and Silk Road, so I didn't really take it too seriously. But after I saw a lot of the work at AIG, I kind of became convinced that Bitcoin was going to be really important. And I felt like I needed a legitimate company to actually take this mainstream. I didn't think that it was going to go mainstream on its own. And so I waited for the legitimate company to come in this space, and I was determined to actually join them. And that ended up being Coinbase. So they announced that they had onboarded Overstock as a merchant. So this is the first time a legitimate company was willing to even associate themselves with Bitcoin. So this was in January 2014. And after I saw that, I just decided that I would join them. So I sent a message to them online. I didn't know anyone there. Yeah, and told them that I really believed in what they were doing. I was passionate about Bitcoin, but I knew they don't need a portfolio risk analyst, so I was willing to do any role for them and basically contribute however I could. So join them. My first role there was, I mean, this was literally the role they just needed, so I had no background on this, but it was a regulatory compliance investigator. And so that role was actually working with law enforcement and teaching them about Bitcoin and helping to trace Bitcoin to catch cyber criminals. So it was a really unique role. Spent time on darknet markets and learned a lot about cybercrime, and then helped build out Coinbase's compliance program. So that was a fun role for me. Then later became product manager for internal tools, so helping Coinbase build tools needed to scale the company. Was there a little over 3 years and then left to start Scalar, which is investing full-time in space.
Wow, that's awesome. I love the hustle. There are like two things in particular I'd love to dig a bit deeper into. One, this cold outreach to Coinbase as, you know, a risk analyst in finance. What did that actually look like? Did you leverage your network? Did you just jump on Twitter and tweet the founder? How did you get your foot in the door?
So I basically looked at the job openings they had, and it was nothing that was a fit for me. And there was just one like super analytical role that basically was for like a software engineer. And I just applied for that. And so that they would just see my cover letter and my resume. And I wrote a really compelling cover letter, just saying that I knew that, you know, this is not exactly the role for me, but I really believed in their mission and I really believed in Bitcoin. And I think that caught their attention. And so then the recruiter, Aurora, she reached out to me and decided to talk to me. And we both acknowledged that this role wasn't an actual fit for me, but that she really liked how passionate I was about crypto and about Coinbase. And she decided to keep in touch with me. And so then I told her basically any role that is even just a close enough fit, like I'll take it. And she then later reached out like a couple months later for the regulatory compliance investigator role. So it was really great to establish that relationship with her. And she was able to recognize that passion is really important for hiring. So I'm deeply grateful for her being able to make that phone call to me.
That's amazing. I think it's also such a great reminder about like passions. In some ways, passion is a word that's kind of like overused when people are like, I'm passionate about X, I'm passionate about Y. But as you said, if you can articulate in a cover letter or any other part of the application how much you believe in the mission of a startup, I think people really do pay attention to that, which is always really great advice. The other question I wanted to ask about your time at Coinbase was how you then transitioned from that compliance role into product manager. I know a lot of people in the product and community are aspiring product managers. How did that happen? And what do you think were the skills that were so relevant that you could then move into that?
Yeah, so I never had aspired to be a product manager. I always had this mentality of basically whatever the company needed, especially in the early days, I was willing to do. And I kind of just like moved between a lot of different roles. When I was working on the compliance team, I was constantly feeling like we needed to improve our systems. Everything was very manual, and I felt like we were just doing very repetitive work on some days. And so I would just talk to the engineers directly and be like, hey, like, I just want to show you how inefficient my tools are right now. There was no product manager for internal tools at the time. And I would just talk to these engineers and like show them what a pain it was. I know how to code, but I'm not a software engineer. And I was like, I know how easy it is for you to just build this for me. Could you just like help me out? And like, and over time, I would just like kind of like help these tools get built ad hoc for the team. And they were like significant improvements. And I like came up with a system that basically tried to just use more data to kind of flag really high risk accounts, because at the time it was just super manual. And I convinced an engineer to just build out that system for me. It ended up being very successful. And after that, I think people really saw the need for having someone who is that like compliance liaison with the engineers. And so I started moving into that role, and I was helping to build some products. And then there was an official product manager for internal tools that ended up starting. That was actually Olaf, who runs Polychain Capital. He was the first employee at Coinbase. So he became product manager of internal tools. He then left to start Polychain Capital. And then when Olaf left, they were like, well, you're like already doing this role for compliance. Do you want to just do this role for like all the other teams? And so I kind of like fell into that role. Yeah, it was really nice. And the way that they set me up was, I think, one of the best examples of when a company actually sets you up for success. So I moved into the role, and then they set me up with a mentor, John Yee at Coinbase. And I shadowed him for a few months before I actually moved officially into the role. So I would sit with him in meetings, and I would basically see kind of the questions he asked, what his role actually looked like day to day. He helped me like learn how to write specs. But the things that I really learned, the skill sets were really important was, I mean, definitely you have to have a clear communication. I mean, you're interfacing with so many different groups, so you need to make sure that your communication is very clear. Writing these specs and was really important to me, so he helped me build that ability. The way that I actually practiced writing specs, so writing how the product should actually work and kind of what I thought the vision of the product was actually I wrote specs for existing products that were within Coinbase that were quite successful. And so I looked at the product itself, and I decided to just write what I thought a good spec for it was. And then I compared it to the original spec. And then I tried to basically see where I differed from the product manager who had written that spec. And so then I was able to kind of like fine tune like what was actually missing in my own specs. The one thing that John Yee really taught me that I think was important that I wasn't good at was actually being able to just ask dumb questions in a room. As a product manager, the worst thing is if you're not on the same page and you're actually totally missing something that someone's telling you and you built the wrong product. So being comfortable just in the middle when someone's explaining something, just being like, wait, hang on a second. What is that actually? Because I actually don't know what that acronym stands for, or I have no idea what you mean by this. And just being okay with sounding stupid in a room. And actually, like, it ended up being that, like, when I would ask these questions, like, oh, what does that acronym even stand for? Other people would be like, oh, I'm so glad you asked that because I had no idea either. Yeah, so that was something that I really learned that was helpful, and just making sure that you understand your customers and you understand exactly what you're building.
That's awesome. That's such great insight. And it's very actionable too, which makes it even more helpful. Staying on Coinbase for some time, I think it's pretty cool. You said you were there for 3 years, which is pretty significant period of time in the startup world. I mean, that's how long I was at university for. Coinbase is such a well-known company. They actually won a Golden Kitty Award.
I saw.
Yeah. I'm a customer. I think they're great. I'd love to know, you know, over that period of time that you were there, how did you see the crypto landscape change, just at a kind of high level?
Yeah, it changed a lot. So when I first joined in 2014, people didn't really care about Bitcoin. And it was only Bitcoin back then, by the way. And so I remember even when I was leaving AIG, on my way out, people were like, oh, good luck at Coinstar, because they like thought I was like at the Change company and they had no idea what Bitcoin was. And so people just weren't aware. And so when I was working at Coinbase, like, it was really nice because you kind of had this like isolated scenario where everyone in the company was super passionate about what they were working on and they really saw Bitcoin's potential. But then when you talked about it outside, like, no one really cared. And so you just had this time to like build and not get distracted by like all this like media attention. When I did join, though, there was like a crash in the price of Bitcoin. Bitcoin was about $600 when I joined, and I remember it crashing to about $200. I stayed there for over a year. And so back then it was like, you know, if you weren't passionate about this, it's kind of something where you maybe can feel discouraged, and people who didn't actually like believe in the technology might have wanted to leave. And so the great thing was that so many people stayed at Coinbase because they had joined just believing in the mission of the company and what Bitcoin's potential was. So it was really nice in the early days, just kind of like being able to work with people who cared so much. And then over time, the attention to the crypto space really changed. And that was in 2017, really, when we saw the ICOs and kind of Ethereum applications being built and all of the attention that was happening with the prices. And that was when it was really chaotic at Coinbase because there was just so many users being onboarded every single day and we couldn't even keep up. There were so many support tickets. So we didn't even have the like all the infrastructure needed to handle like a huge influx like that. And so That was a really interesting time. It was fun because I felt like all of a sudden everyone cared about what you were working on. Like Coinbase was like a cool place, and it was no longer something that enabled like people's perception of like, you know, darknet market money or like dark money. Yeah, the perception really changed, and I'm glad that it has become such a popular company to talk about and work at now. It's been really cool to see.
That's awesome. So cool. And what an exciting time to be a part of that team. I sometimes think of like, you know, my first startup experience, which is at Groupon. And that was kind of like, oh, we're pioneering in like daily deals. It's this like new type of marketing. But to be a part of like Coinbase when crypto is blowing up is just like next level. So I think that's amazing. I want to know, you said that you were at AIG or, you know, Credit Crunch kind of era. You know, what was that catalyst that made you think, I'm jumping into tech? You mentioned that you were exposed to Bitcoin and, you know, blockchain, et cetera. But what was like, you know, maybe that particular experience or the combination of things that made you thought, okay, I'm over finance and I have to be in this world?
I think it was the combination of, I mean, there wasn't like one single moment, but I was working like really, really long hours. Like I was coming in at 9 and then leaving around like 11 p.m. or around midnight. And I remember just like number crunching constantly, and then like sending the numbers out, and then people being like, oh, these numbers actually, like, you know, they may not be like what we're looking for. And you'd be like, well, these are actually the numbers, so I don't really care what you're looking for. And it was kind of just like this like feeling of like, well, what am I like number crunching for? Like, what is like the end goal here? And it was like, I just didn't feel as passionate about like my end work. I was kind of like, yeah, I know it's really important, obviously, to make sure that AIG doesn't run into like a huge financial crisis again. But at the end of the day, like, this is a $400 billion portfolio, and I'm one person in a list of 70,000 employees. And I just kind of felt like I wanted to have a more hands-on role in something that I was really passionate about. And I knew that was going to be crypto. So I wanted to just be able to make the jump and do something that I knew that would be really exciting for me, and that every day I would just be really motivated to work on this and kind of just like not have any regrets that like I spent my entire career working on something that just wasn't for me.
Yeah. Thanks for being so honest with that. I relate a lot to that too, because I studied economics and, you know, for a moment I thought I might be a journalist, and I got to work at the Financial Times through a diversity scheme, which I'm super grateful for. But my first real, you know, permanent contract, full-time job was in a financial publishing company, and we would basically run conferences for investment bankers and CFOs. And, you know, I made a lot of money. It was all kind of like compensation tied to the success of the event. But in terms of like, am I making the world a better place? The kind of things that you dreamed about when you were studying, I didn't feel that at all. And what I loved about tech, I remember watching the film The Social Network and being really inspired by the story of people like hacking together ideas as students and transforming the world through software. And I just wanted a piece of the action. I feel like there are a lot of like millennial and Gen Z people who are operating in tech for that reason. They feel that it, you know, of all the different industries, this one has the most potential to like transform the world.
Yeah, I totally agree. I am glad that I had that experience, because I feel like it puts things into perspective for me, because now I'm just so much more grateful for tech and working in a place where people are able to have flexible hours and your coworkers are actually like nice to you and they hang out. Like, mm-hmm. I'm able to like compare to what it was before. So I'm at least glad that I had that experience.
Amazing. So one thing that I really wanted to ask you was making the transition from, you know, full-time employee to, you know, entrepreneur, investor. How did you sort of like overcome those initial hesitations? And what advice could you give for people who are in a similar space where they see somewhere in the short to mid-term future going out on their own and doing their own thing?
So I had never wanted to start a company before. Like, I was actually pretty adamant about that, because I was like, oh, that's just like way too much risk for me. I want to work my way up in a company. And I mean, moving to Silicon Valley, like I just saw like how many entrepreneurs there were. And it was really cool to just kind of see how people really praised risk-taking here and that it wasn't bad if you failed. And I think that was something I had to learn because I was always used to like, you know, you can't make mistakes. You should like work at this huge company and then just climb your way up the corporate ladder. And that was kind of just like how I thought things were. And so the fact that people encouraged risk-taking here, the fact that founders were so open to sharing the kind of like their lessons learned and what they went through, like it was just really inspiring for me. And Coinbase itself was a really great place for actually encouraging independence. So we had free rein over the things we wanted to build, especially in the early days. So I always felt like this sense of autonomy there. And I really enjoyed that. Like I loved being able to kind of figure out what needed to be done and then just execute it. And so after Coinbase grew a lot, the company culture definitely changed. So, I mean, I joined when there was 30 people. And by the time that it really started changing was around 150. And I think that's like the number where you don't like know everyone anymore. And so I felt like, you know, I wanted to go back to that really small company again, but there was no company out there that I was like, wow, this is like the company I want to join. I realized that, you know, why not start it yourself? I was debating between starting like a company, building a product, or investing in the space. And I was just passionate about so many different things that I felt investing was the right thing for me. I didn't want to just select one area to focus on. I really wanted to look at the broad landscape of crypto because just so much was happening and I wanted to keep up with all of it. And for me, the hardest part was actually trying to figure out who I wanted to work with on this. And I felt like I needed a co-founder personally who just balanced out my skill sets. And so for me, it was finding someone who's really technical to actually help evaluate crypto assets from a very technical level. And I was kind of worried about like pitching this idea to a software engineer that I worked with really closely because I didn't want to like necessarily pull someone who was really happy with the work that they were doing at Coinbase. But then I talked to him and I wasn't even positive that I wanted to do this yet. I was just like kind of floating the idea to him. And he was just immediately like, yeah, that sounds awesome. Like, do you want to put in our 2 weeks today? And I was like, wow, okay. I'm not quite sure if like I'm ready. I still have to like think through all these plans. He's like, all right, well, like I'm going to probably put in my 2 weeks really soon and just like start working on it then. And I was like, oh my God, okay. And so he like kind of like moved me along. And so that was just really helpful for me. And advice I'd give to people who want to start something of their own, definitely talk to a bunch of people who had already done the same thing that you're about to be doing. I wish I had had a lot more of those conversations. I talked to a few people, but I really feel like what I didn't fully understand when I was about to start this is what my day-to-day was actually going to look like. I kind of had this like rosy picture in my head about, oh, I get to just like research different technologies, read white papers and talk to teams. But my day is actually, a lot of it was spent, you know, raising money and talking to investors. And that was just very different than my expectations. So for people that want to start something, just make sure that it is what you actually want it to be. I eventually managed to make it what I wanted to be, but it was definitely at first when I started Scalar, I was kind of just like, whoa, this is like nothing like I had expected. And so yeah, just getting that advice and feedback from people early on is important.
That's amazing. So when you made the decision to do your own thing, and then you made this decision to find a co-founder, how did you approach that process? Like, did you already sort of have in your mind, these would be the dream people? Or did you more have like a dream profile of people? Did you do co-founder dating, set up challenges? What was that like?
I listed my skill sets in a spreadsheet. And I basically was like, I need someone who has like the polar opposite of this. And then I was just like, because I don't want someone to be the exact same as me, because I don't want to ever be caught, especially when investing, you don't want to be caught in this like bubble where you're just like, oh yeah, that sounds like a great idea. Oh, of course, that's a great idea. And you just like, you know, invest in something that's like a terrible idea.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. So I like looked for like my opposite skill sets and I was like, okay, who fits this definition for me? And I immediately thought of Jordan, who's my current co-founder. But yeah, it was kind of just like, I'm very like high energy, like I'm all about execution and just moving things along. And he's like a lot more thoughtful about things. And he'll take the time to like really think through how something works, finding little kinks in it. He was what some people call a Bitcoin maximalist, which means that you really believe in Bitcoin and that you kind of think that any other coins that start up's kind of a waste because you should really just kind of be focused on creating the network effects around Bitcoin because it is the first one out there. It's already been proven to work. There's been no major issues. So you should really like focus your attention on working on Bitcoin rather than like all these random tokens. And I believed in like the token world, like, oh, we can do so much more. Like everything can be so programmable. And so we just really balanced each other out. And that was like the most important thing for me. So I didn't end up doing any. He was the first person I asked and I didn't actually talk to anyone else about it. But I probably wouldn't have started Scalar without him.
That's amazing. For people who aren't familiar, you know, you're backed by an incredible roster of people like, you know, Mark Andreessen, Chris Dixon, his general partner at Andreessen Horowitz Crypto. I just wonder, what do you think were the elements that enabled you and Jordan to get backing from such high-profile people within the crypto space and really the VC space in general?
I think it was honestly passion. Passion has worked for me. So I was blogging a lot about crypto and I would write posts about Ethereum and explaining Ethereum to people. And I started doing that for other coins that I thought were interesting, like Monero. And I was just kind of like writing about this. And I knew that kind of came across when people read my post, that this is something I was just really interested in. And I was keeping up with it and kind of like thinking about this all the time. And so yeah, passion has worked quite well for me. And I actually, I reached out to Chris Dixon on Twitter. Hey, like I'm leaving Coinbase and I'd love to talk to you about crypto. He was so kind to just respond back and set up a meeting. So yeah, I think passion really comes through.
I love the democratizing power of Twitter. I just hear so many stories across the tech and startup space when people are like, yeah, I just tweeted them. And, you know, you can reach people who are otherwise inaccessible through, you know, very cleverly put together 140 characters or something, which is awesome. I've definitely also been able to interact with incredibly impressive people, you know, like Arlen Hamilton at Backstage Capital. And it starts with a tweet. And I just think, yeah, Twitter is so powerful. I get really upset when I meet aspiring techies. I do a lot of events, you know, with young people who want to get into tech. And I'm like, oh, so like, you know, what's your Twitter handle? And they're like, I'm not on Twitter. And I'm like, you can't be in tech and not be on Twitter. You're missing out.
Yeah, I totally agree. I used to be one of those people that was like, I'm never using Twitter. Because I thought it was one of those things where you just update your status of your day constantly. Like, oh, I'm like doing the laundry now. And I'm like going to the store. Like I literally thought that's what Twitter was in the early days. And so I just kind of had this perception that people were just like giving daily updates of their life. And then I like was like, wow, no, there's a huge like tech community on Twitter. And it's absolutely valuable that I'm on it and participating in the conversation and meeting those people. And so, yeah, I feel like Twitter is like the most important way of communicating with people in this industry.
Amazing. So tapping into your expertise at Scalar Capital, I'd love to know, you're obviously meeting so many cool, innovative people in this space. And what I observe as someone who is not by any means like a crypto expert, I mean, I have a Coinbase account, but you know, I'm a noob. I'm curious, what do you think kind of like creates that gap of knowledge between, let's just say like the average person on the internet and the people who are out there creating their own SDKs or their own, you know, tokens and platforms?
So I actually feel like people know a lot about crypto. They just like feel like they don't because they are very overwhelmed with like all of these like news articles and like information that people are posting. And I've done a lot of like I used to host these office hours where I would chat with people about crypto and it would be like a one-on-one conversation. And they would be like, I don't know anything about crypto. Like, please help me. And like, and then you would find out they actually know quite a bit. They just kind of self-doubt themselves because they're just overwhelmed by information. So you're definitely not a noob. Like having a Coinbase account in the first place is actually like, I think a huge step that's like more than, you know, vast majority of people even know about crypto. I think like having accessible content is just a huge barrier in this space. That's why I started writing in the first place. And I had these like beginner's guide to Ethereum. And I think that a lot of people early on in the space kind of like the more you work in the space, the more you like start using like acronyms and you start making up terms and you kind of like start using that lingo and you forget just how inaccessible it is in the first place. for a lot of people. And I really love this term that someone on Twitter talked about, but this idea of complexity theater, this idea where you're like, you try to make things super complex because you just sound really smart. And that's like a ton of people in crypto Twitter who just like, trust me, they're not that intelligent, but they just themselves and sound intelligent. So I think like that's a huge barrier to entry in this space. Another thing that is important to know though is that people use technology all the time without fully understanding it, and that's okay. So like the internet, like I'm using the internet and I like don't know like the ins and outs of every little aspect of what makes the internet run. And people use the US dollar all the time. They don't like understand the full aspects of like how the Fed makes decisions and all the like monetary policy they do. So it's okay they don't know everything, but if they want to know, that's really cool. And there should be like accessible content for people to understand more.
That's so interesting. I love the point you make around we can still use technology or products, even if we don't understand them completely. I often think that about my iPhone or my MacBook. I'll go on Twitter and see some viral tweet about some like really basic product feature that I didn't even know existed and have my like mind blown, like, oh, you can like drag and drop the cursor in a text message. And I'm just like, what? And I often think I'm using my product, especially because I'm not an engineer and have no, you know, personal desire to hack things and personalize them. I'm probably using most of my products to just a fraction of their potential, but that's fine because I don't need it for anymore. And I like that. I like taking that idea to crypto as well. Like if you have disposable income and you're interested in diversifying your portfolio, like why not explore it? And don't overwhelm yourself with all of the different things that are happening in the space.
Yeah, yeah. And one thing people in the crypto space talk about a lot is basically if you don't own your private keys, you don't own your money. And this like whole thing of like you need to basically not keep your funds in a centralized service. The great thing about crypto is that if you want to do that, you have the option to. But not everyone has to do that. Not everyone wants to do that. You don't have to write down your private key and then store it in a really safe place where you have to like pray that you don't lose that. People can just leave it on Coinbase and set up a strong password in 2FA and they feel safer that way. So it's okay. Like it's all about optionality and like what people want to do for themselves.
That's awesome. When you think of some of like the potential within this space, are there any like crazy moonshot ideas that have like landed in your inbox, like in the form of a pitch deck or anything that you've heard in a conversation where you're like, wow, that application of blockchain is just crazy?
There was one that was like super interesting. One of the issues with cryptocurrencies right now is that in the US, it's treated by the IRS as property. So every time you actually use your crypto, like even to like buy a cup of coffee or something, you actually have to pay capital gains or losses on that. And if you were really early on in the space, then you have to pay capital gains. And that just is like really cumbersome and not ideal. And there was this coin called Sov that was basically trying to address that problem where they felt like, you know, okay, well, Bitcoin's treated as property. So why not convince a sovereign nation to actually issue a cryptocurrency as their sovereign currency and then have that be treated as like fiat money? And so that's no longer treated as property. And so you don't have this problem with the IRS anymore. So the Marshall Islands actually passed legislation to issue SOV as a sovereign currency. And so that's like already been passed. And so what they're going to do is have this cryptocurrency SOV distributed to people in the Marshall Islands. So they'll actively be using it. It'll be accepted for tax purposes. It'll be treated just as regular money. And so I thought this was like super interesting application where you now have this mix between sovereign nations and cryptocurrency. It's not something that I'm particularly passionate about, but I thought it was a super interesting application. And like, it was like kind of a moonshot. Like you basically had to convince the sovereign nation to adopt this cryptocurrency. So I thought that was kind of cool.
That is so awesome. Thanks for sharing that example. We have sometimes in Product Hunt team meetings debated whether or not we should have our own crypto. I mean, it's always in jest, but I just feel like Kittycoin has a good ring to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Dogecoin is like extremely popular still. And like that was, you know, like created from a meme. So yeah, I mean, like I think the like joke ones actually work quite well.
Amazing. That's fantastic. Great. So when you put your idealist hat on and think into the future and the way cryptocurrency can transform the world, what is that idealist vision? Like, paint us that picture. You mentioned things like financial inclusion before, but yeah, just go into a bit more detail about all the amazing ways the world could be transformed.
Yeah, so in a very idealistic view, so right now we have 1.7 billion people in the world who are unbanked. So it would be great to bank them and have financial inclusion. And so the way that they can now store some of their own money is actually in a cryptocurrency. If they don't like the volatility, they can store their wealth in a stable coin so their price doesn't fluctuate as much. That's like my ideal world. It's like people who just were excluded from the system in the first place can now store their money. They can actually earn an income in crypto. So they could actually participate in services online. They can basically like do small tasks and get paid out for that services in crypto, stored in their crypto wallet, and now have an income and have a store value. So like that's really compelling to me. I really love this idea where people who are living in places where there's really corrupt governments, where governments are seizing their money, or they're basically spying on their citizens, like to have people be able to have control of their own money and not have to worry about it getting taken away from them. People who want to like flee a country where they're being persecuted, they basically can just flee that country and not have to leave their entire finances behind in a bank account where now the government can seize it. So they can flee with everything that they own in terms of their wealth, and they can now just move somewhere else and not have to start over again. So like that's really exciting for me. And then for other parts where how does like crypto affect like people living in somewhere like the US? Well, I mean, it's actually just like enormously inefficient to basically only be able to access your money in the bank during banking hours. Like that's just kind of absurd to me. And so being able to access your money whenever you want, being able to send it out very quickly, not having to wait 4 to 5 business days, not having to pay like, you know, $15 to $30 wire fees when you send money out, like that's just enormously inefficient to me. And so crypto, in my opinion, could just lead to financial inclusion and then just improve efficiency of the existing financial infrastructure.
That's amazing. What do you feel, given the position you're in to analyze this space, what do you feel are some of the biggest blockers to progress? Like, is it legislation, the fact that government isn't catching up enough? Is it limitations of the technology? What are some of the things that are kind of holding us back from getting closer to that vision?
I think definitely education is still a huge limitation. You still have people who just have no idea what crypto is. I think it's really important actually that you build applications that actually abstracts away a lot of that. You can't abstract away everything because people will still have to maybe learn this idea of like a private key if they don't have a Coinbase in their country. But yeah, like abstract away as much as possible. And I think we're still not there yet. Like decentralized applications or dApps, as people call them, are just really difficult to use sometimes. Like even I get confused on how to use them, and I work in this space full time. So education, abstracting away crypto as much as you can. The technology definitely needs to get there. If everyone in the world right now were to use crypto, there's no way anything that we have built right now can actually withstand that. So there needs to be a lot of work on scaling in the space. Generally, just like more infrastructure. So having better wallets that people can use, having more custody solutions that institutions can use. The legislation piece, in my ideal world, the IRS does not treat cryptocurrencies as property, but that's, I think, probably a much longer with them. But I think the SEC actually has been pretty reasonable in the space. There was like a top official at the SEC that was saying that Ethereum is no longer considered to be a security because it's sufficiently decentralized. And so it shows that they even understand this concept of decentralization and why that's important to crypto. And so I feel like they've been pretty reasonable. There have definitely been countries that have kind of taken a harder stance on crypto. So like China and India have been a lot harsher. So I think just having like friendlier regulation is just really critical. Wyoming has done a really good job at friendly regulation. They're kind of like pioneering that within crypto, which was kind of surprising to me because when I was at Coinbase, Wyoming was actually one of the like most difficult ones. A while back, like in the early days, basically Wyoming had this policy that for every like Bitcoin, and for every one Bitcoin that Coinbase had, you had to have the equivalent fiat amount stored in the bank account. So you basically had to just have like double the reserves. And that made no sense. And so Coinbase was like, yeah, we're just not going to service Wyoming. And since then, there's been a lot of improvements to regulation, and they're actually now the pioneers. So it goes to show that with enough education and kind of like supporting this, you can really improve things and kind of become the pioneer. So I thought that was a really cool example of regulators getting more educated.
That's amazing. So switching gears a bit to your life as an investor, I'd love to know, there could be some people listening who are maybe building some solutions that they want to bring to your attention. What are some of the kind of like values and principles that guide your investment philosophy, you and Jordan?
So we are very open to all kinds of things as long as it's a coin or token. My goal is actually to make sure that I'm not pigeonholing myself to like only a specific thesis. I want to be open to everything. We do particularly like to see people working on privacy. So that's something that is an area that Jordan and I really focus on. Bitcoin's extremely transparent. I think people have this notion that it's this like anonymous currency still, and every single transaction on Bitcoin is actually on this public ledger. So once you know someone's Bitcoin address, you can see their balance, you can see incoming and outgoing transactions. So there's a lot of information that gets revealed. And so we like to invest in people who are working on privacy solutions to hide the sensitive information from default showing to the entire world, but allowing people to be compliant whenever they want to be. So we really like that type of project. And so we've invested heavily in the space. But honestly, like people who are building something that actually solves a needed problem in the space, we really will talk with people that are just super passionate. As I mentioned, passion worked really well for me. And so even if it's not something I invest in, I just love talking to very passionate people and giving feedback on their ideas and stuff. So I'm very open to talking to people.
That's awesome. Are you focusing on a particular stage?
We're across the stage. So we invest both early stage private and then also the public markets. So as long as it's a good idea and a good team, we'll buy it.
And then for people out there who are in the VC world, maybe they're associates, maybe they're partners, what are some of the things that you do to try and make sure that the best deals come to you, or at least the best founders and the best ideas? Like, are there like hacks or tactics you can share about how you build your community and your presence to make sure you get in on the action?
This might be particular crypto because I'm not as familiar with like traditional VC, but community building is absolutely critical in crypto, because you basically have these open source protocols and everyone in the world can participate in this. You're kind of like public from day one once you launch, because anyone in the world can now own this. And so you have to manage the community properly. And so for me, I've been really involved in the communities. In the early days at Coinbase, I would co-host something called Code School, where you basically brought in developers into the company to teach the engineers about what's being worked on. And so you kind of had this like open line of communication between the Coinbase engineers and the protocol developers. Over time, then I started co-organizing the SF Ethereum developer meetups. And so I was meeting developers really early on in the Ethereum space. Anyone can host a meetup. It branched off from basically us attending the Silicon Valley Ethereum meetups down in Palo Alto, and then wanting one in San Francisco as well. So if you feel like there's like a meetup that you want to host, like you can just start that, and you can kind of like, it's a really great way of like meeting people really early on and meeting people who are also passionate. I also have made a huge effort to go to hackathons around the world. So crypto is a very global industry. And so you want to make sure that you're not just only looking at Silicon Valley and potentially missing out on what's being built outside. And so I make an effort to go to these hackathons that are held all over the world. And that's where you really build up your network of really amazing builders. And that's kind of what I've been particularly focused on.
That's amazing. I love that you brought out this link between community and crypto. Product Hunt being a community, we love communities. They're all things online community. But that's definitely something that I have noticed as well. Like a lot of the people I know who have been active in the crypto space far longer than myself got into it through communities or subreddits or whatever. So I think there's something in that. And I do think that community is valuable, like wherever you are operating within the World Wide Web and the internet and tech, just because we spend so much of our time online now. And so much of that time is in the communities that we identify with. That's where we find delight. That's where we find value. And yeah, I'm really glad that you kind of like brought that up.
Yeah, and Twitter is a great way, like as we talked about before, of just like building that community. Like you can just reach out to people and people are super open about meeting up. And so you can just like quickly build up your community by just participating in these like, you know, social networks.
Yeah, that's awesome. Would you say that there are any like particularly open or friendly crypto communities that you know? So I know, for example, like Token Daily, run by Suna, is like pretty great. Are there any others that you spend a lot of time in?
So I think the Reddit community is really strong within crypto. So I do spend a lot of time looking at our Ethereum and kind of like keeping up with what's happening there. There's a lot of really great newsletters that I think like help showcase where the communities are popping up. So I really like the newsletters Token Economy. There's Global Coin Research if people want to focus on the Asian community, Proof of Work newsletter for people that want to just keep up with individual projects. So there's a lot of really good newsletters that kind of like help people kind of just like learn about the new communities.
Do you see any trends around where the best crypto makers are based? The reason I ask is I know, for example, there are certain like universities that are really well known for creating like great makers in X field or good graduates in whatever field. And I was just curious if there is like any kind of trends around where like crypto makers are. I just wonder.
I definitely have been extremely impressed with the Berkeley community. So there's Berkeley Crypto Club and they are super active. They host a ton of events. They bring in great speakers. They run SF Blockchain Week. And they started this program called SHE-256, which allows people to get paired up with a mentor or mentee in the crypto space. And so they've been super involved and I've loved that community. I think they're kind of at the forefront within universities. So I have been searching like in various parts of the world and trying to figure out where the best makers right now. And I think still Silicon Valley is, in my opinion, has been the strongest. But there has been a huge group of people in Berlin that have done a lot of really great work too. So Berlin's been quite a crypto hub as well.
Amazing. That's just like another reason to go to Berlin, one of my favorite cities. So at Product Hunt, particularly in the makers community, we're always looking for productivity hacks, ways that we can be more effective and efficient throughout our day. I'd love to know if there are any tips that you can share, ways that you get a lot done in a day effectively.
Yeah, I love productivity hacks. Like I spend so much time searching for them. So I just love like checklists and like to-do lists. I think that's just like really helps me keep up with things. And I feel this like sense of accomplishment when I like, you know, finish something and I like can check it off. And Trello has just been a really great tool for that. So I actually manage all of my things that I need to get done in Trello. I'm obsessed with Superhuman. It's made managing emails so much better. I'm actually at inbox zero like all the time now, which is just like never happened before. And so Superhuman is just really efficient. You can, you know, send reminders for you to like check back at that email. You can schedule emails for sending out later. I love this feature where you can do an instant intro. Someone interests you, someone, you can automatically just be like, oh, thanks this person for the intro, move to BCC, and then like moves the person to BCC. And so it's just like things like that just like make my life so much easier. I love Calendly. It links up with my Google calendars and basically allows people to kind of schedule meetings because I have a lot of people that reach out for a call or for coffee or something. And so I can just send them my Calendly and be like, yeah, I'd love to chat. Here are the times I'm available. Feel free to pick any of those times. And they'll just pick an open time slot. And then Calendly will schedule it, send an email to both of you guys and have it on the calendar. And so I love those tools. They've just helped me cut down on so much time.
Yeah, amazing. I think you really hit the nail on the head there when you kind of said they save you time. Time is such a precious commodity. And I can imagine, especially living the life of an investor, running to meetings and doing all the research, it must be amazing to invest in products that save you time or help you do things more quickly. Thanks so much for all those productivity hacks. Obviously, being Product Hunt, we love all kinds of products, even ones that don't necessarily have utility, but maybe a bit wacky or fun. What are other products either on your radar, on your phone, in your home, that you're finding really interesting at the moment or that you like or that are useful?
Yeah, I'm obsessed with this app that my friend David King created. It's in beta right now, but you can sign up. I think it's highlighter.app, but I'm not positive. So it is this like community for people that really love books. And when you're reading a book, you can just take your phone, take a picture of the page, and then you can then use your finger to highlight the actual text, and it converts that text, that image text, into actual post. And then you can comment on that text. You can kind of like share this with others, and then you can kind of form your like own book clubs online. And so anyone can kind of just like share passages and talk about it. And I love this idea, and I love the community that's already been formed around it. And I'm really into Wobot these days. So Wobot is this like chatbot that you can talk to that really kind of like helps improve your mood and your way of thinking. So I check in with it every day. I know it's weird, it's like a chatbot, but I like check in with it every day, and it keeps track of your mood. So you like record your mood every day so you can kind of like see trends. Then when you are not having a good day, it will kind of give you these tools that are really helpful for improving your mood, for maybe improving your communication style, whatever is causing the problem. They like give you the tool set that's helpful for you to solve it yourself, which is kind of like just extremely helpful for me to just be in better control of like my own feelings. And they, when you're having a good day, they like ask you to record three things that made you really happy. So it's like a gratitude journal. So I just love this tool. And it said like, if you use this for like 2 weeks, you're going to notice significant improvements. And I've been using it for several weeks now, and I really noticed like a complete shift in how I think, and I'm just more self-aware. So it's been wonderful.
That's amazing. I need to download this. How did it come onto your radar? How did you find it?
It's someone on Twitter. Yeah, someone on Twitter replied on one of my posts about it. And so I just tried it out. I remember I had this post where I was like, oh, something that's been really helpful for me that I learned at Coinbase was whenever you run into a negative situation, basically list all of the facts of the situation and then list all of the stories. And facts are things that like a third party observer is going to list as facts. And you start realizing that all the things that you're like really like upset about, like a lot of them, when it comes to dealing with another person, fall into stories. Like you're making assumptions about the person's intentions. You don't necessarily know where their head's at. So like, it's really important to separate that out. And this person replied back and was like, yeah, like I actually noticed when I list all these things out, Wobot has been really helpful in me catching that. And I was like, oh, like what's Wobot? And I like checked it out and I was like, oh my God, this is like amazing.
That's so cool. You convinced me to go check it out. I've been trying to meditate every day of 2019, which isn't that hard because we're only a few days into it, 20 plus days into it. It's been great to have that moment to reflect. I feel that we live in times where there are so many things competing for our attention and our headspace. So any tool that allows me to block out the noise and just reflect on how I feel or what's going on, I will always give time to. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I need to meditate. Like that's just been on my list of things to do. And yeah, you've inspired me to make more of an effort to meditate. I've never heard someone be like, I meditated and that was a horrible experience for me.
So yeah, I mean, I definitely recommend it. Finding the right app always helps, but there are also guided meditations on YouTube. So, you know, whatever mood you're in, just find a good spot. I also find doing it first thing in the morning before I do anything, like before I take my phone off airplane mode, is the best time, because then I kind of like set myself up for being focused on everything. So like if I start the day with a meditation and I'm focused on my breathing and I'm focused on how I feel, then it makes it a lot easier for me to like stay focused throughout the day. I just feel that like, well, one of the key things with focus is just saying no to stuff. So like saying no to that urge to open up Instagram or Twitter, or like, you know, saying no to that urge to like open up an email that isn't actually urgent or important. And that's one of the good things I like about meditation.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Awesome. So this is your opportunity to tell the community really what they can help you with and where they can find you.
I just love talking to people who are really passionate about crypto and are building exciting things. I'm happy to give feedback on and kind of like brainstorm new ideas. So yeah, Twitter is a really great place to reach out to me. My handle's LJXIE. XIE is my last name, pronounced Shay. And yeah, reach out to me on Twitter and I'm happy to chat.
That's awesome. I feel like I have to state for the record that Twitter did not like sponsor this episode of Product Hunt.
I know. Yeah. I mean, I just love Twitter. They didn't sponsor.
Maybe we should get them to sponsor. Jack, if you're listening, we'd love to have you. Wonderful. Well, Linda, thank you so much for giving us your time today. It's been incredible to hear all about your career journey, all about your expertise in the crypto space. And yeah, can't wait to connect with you again soon.
Thanks so much. That was really fun.
Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, share the podcast with your friends on Twitter and tag a guest you'd like to hear in a future episode. See you soon.